Heart takes, not hot takes. This is Everyone is Wrong, a counterintuitive pop culture podcast. I'm your host, Seth Sommerfeld. Thanks for listening. Hello, Treefort. Welcome to you who have shown up, and thanks for coming. My guest today always delivers, doesn't command a child army, and has never become a Masonic figure after looting a corpse. He has trudged across the wild Northwest landscape to take up arms for Kevin Costner's 1997 post-apocalyptic American epic, The Postman. Everyone is wrong, but Brennan Poyner isn't. Thanks for coming on, Brennan.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Hello, Treefort to your ears.
Thank you.
Just as a description for those who might be unfamiliar with the podcast, generally people come on and defend things in pop culture which are wildly derided and bring five defense points to say why actually everybody's wrong, this is great. The one thing about Treefort is we have a shorter time, so it's only 3 points of defense, but our episodes have covered everything from Jaws 3D to the Matrix sequels to later seasons of The Simpsons, to the baseball player Alex Rodriguez. And occasionally we do takedown episodes, too, on things like the movie La La Land and Mank. But this time we are here to defend The Postman, or at least Brennan is, and I am here to be the sounding board against that. So with that in mind, I'm just going to show the trailer to The Postman, just for those who may be unfamiliar, and get a sense of what we are in for here.
In the future, after the Great War, our civilization lies in ruin. Government does not exist. Technology has been erased. And everything man remembers is gone. Out of the chaos, a lawless army will arise to prey on the few survivors. But to a people who have lost their hope.
You are a dangerous man. I can see it in your eyes.
He will give them courage.
I have a feeling about you.
He will restore their memories of the past.
It's the individual that counts.
These people don't need dreams. They need help. Are you going to bring them that?
I want him bound. I want him dealt with.
He will unite them.
You have a gift, Postman.
With a message of freedom.
I challenge the leadership of the clan. You want a war? I'll give you a war!
Kevin Costner, Academy Award-winning director of Dances with Wolves, brings you an epic new vision of our future.
There's gonna be new laws! There's gonna be peace!
So yeah, that's The Postman. That is what we are talking about. The Postman is a 1997 post-apocalyptic American action epic starring and directed by Kevin Costner. He plays the titular postman alongside Olivia Williams as his unusual love interest, Abby, Will Patton as the villainous General Bethlehem, and Lawrence Tate as Postman's most loyal follower, Ford Lincoln Mercury. And yes, that's his actual name in this movie for reasons to be discussed. This is a 3-hour movie with a lot of plot, so I'm going to try and speed through what exactly happens to give you a sense of it. The action takes place in a post-apocalyptic Pacific Northwest after the United States government has long since dissolved in the very distant year of 2013. So, society has crumbled, but it's more like a Wild West rather than like a nuclear fallout situation. And we as viewers follow the adventures of the unnamed nomad played by Costner, who makes his way scavenging and performing Shakespeare as he wanders across from town to town. But after stopping in one town, he gets captured and forcibly conscripted by the Holiness, a military militia sort of ruling the region under the force of Patton's General Bethlehem. The general and nomads size each other up over Shakespearean lines, but the militaristic fascism isn't exactly the nomad's speed, and he's able to escape during a fortuitous trip to a suspension bridge. Seeking shelter after escaping, he discovers an old mail truck, and while in the truck, he gets a satchel full of old letters that were never delivered, and puts on the postman's hat and decides to hoof it out to the next town. And when he gets there, it's the town of Pineview, and he basically is like trying to lie his way into getting food and shelter. So he says he is from the reformed United States government. And, you know, the first thing they're doing, of course, is delivering letters again. Because that's definitely the most essential public service. And eventually he just is scrambling and finds a letter that's meant for one of the people in the city, reads it, and everybody just suddenly flips and is like, this is the greatest human that has ever existed. They let him into his town, and there's also, you know, they give him food and everybody's stoked, and he sort of becomes this beacon of hope. And he meets one townswoman, Abby, or townsperson Abby, who her husband is impotent, so she's like, I need to have your seed to make a child. While he's right there, he's like, yeah, do that. Please, lay with my wife. The people eventually, before he leaves, everybody starts writing mail for him to deliver, and he also inspires this young boy named Ford Lincoln Mercury, because there's a sign that says Ford Lincoln Mercury in the town for an old like dealership. And he swears in Ford Lincoln Mercury as a postman just to kind of like get him off his back. But then he takes the new letters that everybody wrote and is like, hey, this is a pretty good hustle. I can just keep going around towns and sort of doing this as his new hustle instead of doing Shakespeare. The problem arises when, after he leaves Pineview, General Bethlehem shows up, takes Abby hostage, kills her impotent husband, and then everybody's like, we don't like you anymore. Not that we liked you when you were marauding, but now you're trying to, the government's back. There's a postman who told us. And he sort of, the lore of the postman spreads, and it sort of becomes a resistance movement against the Hollinists, and eventually leads to an epic battle between the Hollinists and the post people, because Ford Lincoln Mercury in Costner's stead puts together a postal service, basically, and it's like a child army.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, the postman arrived in theaters on Christmas Day 1997 and was lambasted by critics and moviegoers alike, bombing at the box office and only making $20.8 million against an $80 million budget. Before we get into the critical reception, Brennan, what's your relationship with this movie?
Oh, man. Well, I'm from Spokane, Washington, and my relationship with it is that I knew that it was being filmed up in Meadowlane Falls, Pineview, where the main town that Kevin Costner poses as a postman. He goes there, and I knew it was filmed there, and then I saw it in the theater. And I'm a Kevin Costner apologist. I love him and anything that he's in, pretty much. And I don't know, as a young 12-year-old boy, I was like, this is fun. It gave me hope. And like, I thought it was really just, it's not very action packed, but there's just a lot going on in
There's action in this movie. There's a lot of, it takes a while to get going.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of lore in the beginning. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is a bunch of gunfights with, you know, people riding on horses. And it's a Western.
It's very much a Western. Yeah. Kevin Costner loves Westerns, as everyone probably should know.
And America.
And America.
As this movie repeatedly hammers home. But yeah, so as for the critical response to this movie, it bombed at the box office and among critics. The Postman sits at 12% on Rotten Tomatoes, 8% among top critics, and a rotten but much higher audience score of 50%.
There you go.
Time Out's Nick Bradshaw wrote, the film aims for an uncomfortable compromise between the dramatic sincerity of Dances with Wolves and the epic spectacle of Waterworld, but lacks the explanatory detail and narrative fluency to achieve either. USA Today's Mike Clark, in a 1.5-star review, said, how weird is this movie? Well, Patton's army regularly sits outdoors at a makeshift drive-in, watching and cheering on a battered print of The Sound of Music. That does happen. Lawrence Tate plays a postman wannabe who saw an old automotive logo and changed his name to Ford Lincoln Mercury. Fiddler's repertoire at the town dances is heavy on golden oldies, including The Loving Spoonful. And though the movie doesn't specifically say so, Tom Petty seems to be playing himself. We will get to Tom Petty. He's in this movie. And have we mentioned the scene where our hero plays Shakespeare opposite of Mule? That's also a good scene we will talk about. And even the patron saint of this podcast, who usually defends the movies that nobody else likes, was Roger Ebert. And he couldn't stand this movie, saying, "The Postman knows no restraint. Even every scene is played to the hilt for its mythic tear-jerking potential. And after a while, the movie runs nearly 3 hours. This accumulated sentiment begins to curdle. The dialogue, a numbing succession of Western movie cliches, is spoken with cartoon balloon emphasis that makes it all seem all the more phony." The lone positive voice for the Postman was Variety's Todd McCarthy, who wrote, "The sweeping movement of this tale across half a continent and frequent action that facilitates it is conveyed in a majestic and for most part exciting manner. Visually, the pick is nearly always stimulating thanks to exceedingly striking unfamiliar locations, the grand cinematography by Stephen Winden, Ida Randum's handcrafted production design, and John Blumfield's imaginatively patchwork costumes, adding a big canvas rendering a passionately expressed vision of what the United States was and is meant to be. The Postman is a rare epic film that is actually about something." So, Brennan, why is everyone wrong about The Postman?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing is that it is a very epic movie, and it's a cautionary tale. Like, the premise is that the world that Kevin Costner lives in, where they're at in the region, was taken over by the wholeness, and it's just this ragtag group of white males that are after fallout. Some they don't know what happened. We don't know what happened.
Yeah, it's kind of like, clear, but yeah, that's your first point of defense is sort of this the epic scale, of this cautionary tale, and like there was some farmer who led a rebellion that like seemed to throw everything into disarray, and they also like mentioned that there was like diseases and plagues and stuff like that. It's sort of just like it's like bad stuff happened. It, like it's most post-apocalyptic. It's like, well, there was this one virus or there was this nuclear fallout, and they're just like bad stuff happened, and now it's like bad, but not like as bad as some post-apocalypse.
Things have gotten better. Yeah. They kind of lay that out in the very beginning of the film. But I just think it's if something like this ever happened, I mean, this is very much what could happen to our world. Like and at the time, like, and I love post-apocalyptic films, and I like ones that really represent like what could happen. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is very much represents, especially in our where we live in America, like definitely could happen here.
Yeah, it is in our, like, they mentioned, like, this is Oregon, Idaho. It's very Pacific Northwest-y. And, yeah, as you were saying, it's, you know, got some points that do seem, like, fairly relevant. Like, the militia is these, like, they hint that it's, like, a white supremacist, but they like, kind of just, like, sprinkle that in at the very top and then sort of, like, let it go. But
yeah,
it's very much, like, the dudes who are, like, "We finally got a chance, us men." people who use like the word woke very sincerely. But yeah, it's also kind of a weird thing because it's 2013, which isn't that much time. So you're always kind of like piecing together, even in 1997, you're like, wait, this all like fell apart in 2 decades. And like some people don't remember Shakespeare. They're like, what is this? Things that you are saying. But then they like do reference like vampires, so it's like not everything in pop culture has faded away yet. And like Plainview has like electricity sometimes, and
that didn't really make sense. The technology aspect of it, I mean, like this is the 90s, so like there is, I guess they lived in a world without the internet yet, but it is very like vague of like where do they get the electricity? Like they have it, but like they can't communicate. So yeah, it is
right. There's no like it's sort of like. It really is like a Wild West throwback where it's just like, oh, yeah, you just like wander from town to town and like the towns themselves are like functioning and stuff like that. But then, you know, a band of marauders can come through and just be like, yeah, well, we have less guns and they have guns. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it goes. It's also, I should say at this point, it is the most elaborate like propaganda piece for the U.S. Postal Service of all time because it's just like, look what will save us from societal ruin, delivering the mail. It's the one thing that gives us hope.
I mean, I think that's what, I mean, the idea about it too is that like Kevin Costner at the beginning of the film is a like actor. Like he's like going around town to town performing Shakespeare. And then like he finds this like postman's outfit and then he like kind of takes this role and he doesn't think it's really going to go anywhere. But like, but these people find hope in communicating and being able to like hear from my sister who I haven't heard from in 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I think the hope is like what inspire, like obviously inspires the them to be like, no, we should stand up against the wholeness. And I was like, and that's why I loved it. Like, it was just like, go like, yeah, kill Will Penn.
Yeah. And, you know, you sort of spoke to the scale of this. This is a 3-hour movie and it does feel like that it is Kevin Costner sort of in the, you know, he'd made Dances with Wolves and won the Oscar and won Best Director. And it was less like, oh man, this is, you know, our, lots of people were like, this is our next great American filmmaker. And then he makes Waterworld and a bunch of people jump off. And this is sort of like the post Waterworld thing. But it is trying for that hugeness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are battles and romance and, you know, it doesn't rush through anything. It's, you know, there's a whole subplot where when he's escaping after a capture that he's just like they're nursing back together him and Abby in like a cabin for like 6 months, which is why he's like surprised when Ford Lincoln Mercury shows up and it's just like, oh, I've like recruited 100 people to be part of your postman child army.
Right. Yeah, no, it's very much like, I mean, the Waterworld hangover thing is definitely, that's one of the reasons about it. Like, I feel like it gets such a bad rap because I feel like critics came into it with like that in their mind. Like, Waterworld was a humongous box office bomb. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of, they kind of played off that a lot.
Right. And that's sort of like, that's one of your defenses generally is that like this movie unfairly gets some of the Waterworld backlash. Mm-hmm. Where it's just like people were thinking, it's not even as much that people were tired of this movie specifically, but they're like, oh, he's just like swinging so big again. Mm-hmm. And always trying this sort of brand of self-importance, which I'll show a clip here to show. So this is a scene where the postman, it's after he's accepted that, like, a lot of the movie, he's, like, sort of being, like, trying to distance himself because he's really more of a grifter than, like, an inspirational leader. He's just like, the president's in Minnesota, and he sends me direct lines, which is why I'm communicating with all of you. And then Ford Lincoln Mercury also, like, takes that up and is lying.
I mean, he's a real hero in this. He's the one who like starts everything. Yeah. Like Kevin Costner doesn't, he shows up, he kind of gets hurt, like you said, disappears for 6 months, and then like Ford Lincoln Mercury like gets all of these people to like just take over the cause.
Yeah. So this is a scene after the Postal Service has been reestablished and everything. And I need to stress that this is like the emotional core of this movie. This scene is supposed to make you cry. They literally repeat it at the end of the movie. And here's a little taste of sort of the melodrama that is at the core of The Postman. Little boy's running out to get a letter to the postman, but he already passed. And oh no, it's so sad. The little boy's letter won't be delivered.
I missed him.
Just a bunch of slow motion standing shots. Boy holds up the letter. And damn it if the postman isn't going to go back for it. In slow motion also.
If that doesn't give you hope, I don't know it well.
So, yeah, that is definitely supposed to make you cry. That is the emotional core. That's also Kevin Costner's Nepo Baby acting in that. It is, and if you're just listening, you can tell this is maybe the most, like, I'm going to tell you exactly how to feel soundtrack of, like, any movie that I can recall. It is very on the nose, sweeping epic. But yeah, I think a lot of the backlash is sort of this, where it's just like a lot of it was like there's a sincerity to Kevin Costner.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's something that can really work in like a movie like Dances with Wolves. But it's also if you get so many doses of it, and this was like the third epic dose of it
right. In
a short period in the 90s, where it's just like, man, you are. That's kind of corny. You are trying so hard. You are using slow motion every chance you get to sort of emphasize how you're supposed to feel so much for America in this moment. And yeah,
I never got that as a kid. Like, I never got the America thing. Like, I really was just like, as a kid, I just like really enjoyed just the beats of the movie and how like it kind of, because it goes from like set piece to set piece to set piece to set piece, and it's not really paced poorly. It's just, I don't know. And as a kid, I just like really ate it up. It was a movie I owned on VHS, so I just like always popped it in and watched it over and over again. And I don't know, maybe I just really just loved that aspect of it. It was just like, it was entertaining and I could fall asleep to it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's sort of pretentious in the like most literal way of the thing, where it's just like, this is an important movie and it wants you to know
right. That
like it's an important movie, and it's really hard to be that naked about like wanting it to be important unless you're like making something that's just perfect within an inch of its life. And this has, you know, enough things where it's dragging in flaws where I think people were sort of doing that. But I mean, I don't know. Is there anything else you wanted to hit sort of on the Waterworld discussion and sort of like the lasting impact and sort of how this is?
The only thing I will say about the Waterworld is that if you watch the two, I mean, I could also do a episode on Waterworld because I also love that movie, obviously.
Yeah, there might be a Waterworld podcast coming. I've had somebody else reach out to me wanting to do a Waterworld one.
The beats are the same, and that's probably another reason why it is very much like, I mean, he did Waterworld, he did Tin Cup, which is a really great golf movie, and then he did The Postman. And the follow-up, like Waterworld with another post-apocalyptic movie, was probably a poor choice on Kevin Costner's part.
Mm-hmm. And as a way of like transitioning into sort of our next point, which is sort of about how much you enjoy the actors, not only Costner, but like a lot of the supporting characters, especially Will Patton's General Bethlehem and Olivia Williams Abby. This is a taste of Will Patton and sort of the huge shift in energy that he brings to his villainous role as opposed to Costner's Costnery
right.
hero.
Yeah.
This is, as I was saying, when Costner is conscripted into the wholeness camp, he is then singled out by the general in order to, because he hears that he knows Shakespeare, and the general also knows Shakespeare, so they kind of have a Shakespeare off.
To be or not to be, that is the question.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
Yeah.
So yeah, Patton brings a lot of energy to Bethlehem. I will grant you that. It reminds, in the podcast lore, we did an episode of Jupiter Ascending, and Eddie Redmayne's villain in that movie is so like chewing up the scenery and over the top. And Patton in this one feels like he's aware that this is a sweeping epic and like wants to sink his teeth into it and go for the like the full gusto.
Mm-hmm. You know, he's very much the scene stealer in every scene that he's in, and he's trying to play that role of being like he was a copy machine salesman before the
that's his backstory. He describes it to Coster's character like when they're having a private meeting, and he's like, you know what I was before the war? A copy machine salesman. And like, these are the moments for men like me to seize the day and seize the power that I couldn't have had in that old stodgy.
He's definitely trying to act that he's like the leader of this group of the wholeness. And he's, yeah, in every scene that he's in, he's very much overacting. And, but at the same time,
it's
like, it's good.
Very fun.
It's good.
It's like, I would say it's like the most consistent, like, fun through line. It's just like when he shows up, you know he's gonna just like be going for every single line delivery.
He needed to be a good villain for this movie. So
right, and there's lots of other things where like he has a little bit of Jim Carrey-ness to him in this role, I found, where he's just like he's hamming it up so big that it like can read comedic, like I think somewhat intentionally, even when it is supposed to be that dramatic. But, you know, it is really like this movie is a battle of a couple of frauds. Like he's the, you know, grandiose fraud who like wants it. And he's like, I didn't have this in the past life. I need this now. And Costner's sort of the reluctant fraud where he's just like, oh, shucks. I mean, I guess like I'm kind of just like I'd prefer just to be lazy and give a house and this. But I guess you've made me your messiah. So shrug.
Totally. No, it's very much the dichotomy of the two.
Mm-hmm. And even in like the last, like when they end up having their final confrontation, Costner's coming and he's like waving a white flag in order to like goad him into this like personal battle. And Patton's general is, instead of being like, oh man, this guy's like had a rebellion formed against me and he's leading this up, he's like, is he surrendering? God, I hope not. You know, he's just like, he just wants, he has a bloodlust to him. There's lots of like slow motion, like slashing where he like kills people just to be like, I can kill people.
Right. He is very much like, he's very much bloodthirsty. He is like a dictator role. Like he does like capture Olivia Williams and like takes her hostage for a short amount of time that they never really discuss in the movie. That was like the weirdest part of the movie.
There's time issues in this movie.
Very
because
big time issues.
It seems like there's lots of like whatever, regardless, the postal service that gets assembled so fast because as we mentioned, the one thing that we know about the timeline is that when the postman first gets courted by Abby to, you know, be her child seed giver. Mm-hmm. They copulate the relationship, and then at the end of the movie, she finally gives birth. But it seems like there's like 2 years of action in between there.
Totally, yeah.
Like even just like when they're nursing each other, you know, up in like this cabin, it seems like that's like months, but it can't be months because
I think it was like over winter. They had to like
they
had
to hide
like out
during over
winter,
but then that means that like everything else happens in like 6 months, which is just
That doesn't make any
sense.
And
they're also again also so much of this is they're traveling and there aren't cars. I don't think you maybe saw in some of the clips, there aren't like cars and vehicles, so it's mainly all just like it's horse transportation and mule transportation. Mm-hmm. And they're taking these letters to far off distant outposts in the Pacific Northwest, these new cities, and doing a lot of it. So days, journeys, and
But they all get there in like one scene. So there's no like, it would be boring if they were traveling during all the scenes anyways. Mm-hmm. But Olivia Williams, though, I've Like,
yeah, Abby is another one of the key characters.
My first introduction to her, and I thought she was this an amazing woman in this movie, and then like obviously, and she's amazing in Rushmore, and I can't think what else she's in, but I don't know, she plays a really strong woman in this movie, and I thought that was like a good choice for like her, like that for like. For the character, like she doesn't play a weak woman. Like she gets into a gunfight. She takes care of Costner. She's like very, but then at the end she does kind of like fold. But she falls in love with Costner. Like
she's a very strange character in this movie because first off she starts off being like, yes, you would make a good breeder for me essentially, and all this, and then is like very clear like it is a. The strange thing where Costner's like catches feelings for her immediately, and she's like, well, what are you talking about? We had like this arrangement, like,
right,
you are not the father of my child, you're like the seed bearer, but you are not the father. It's Michael's the father,
even after Michael dies. She's like, it's not your child, it's Michael's child,
right? But she also has like very, like, he literally comments multiple times, like, you're very weird, and they're like justified things. She does. At one point, like, almost drown in, like, a creek of water where it's like, why are you, and Costner has to save her. But, she calls him to that seed thing the body father of her child, which is just, like, gross terminology.
Very gross.
And she also, when they're done with the cabin, she sets the cabin on fire so that, like, Costner's character can't just, like, lounge around and, like,
Why she burnt it down?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's like burns down the cabin. She's like, we need to go back to the city. And he's like, he doesn't see this. He just sees like the cabin's on fire. And he runs back and he's like, are you okay? Did you get the stuff out? And she's like, yeah, obviously I got the stuff out. I burned down the cabin so that we could leave. And it's just like, wait, we're like in like a post-apocalypse. You could just like leave the cabin there and just in case like you need to go back in the wilderness later. But yeah, she sort of has like almost chaotic waifu energy a little bit. And to tell what type of movie this is, any guesses on what they name their daughter eventually when she comes, when she gets birthed? Anybody guess? What would a daughter be named?
Letter.
Hope.
It's Hope. Yes. It is Hope.
She hasn't seen the movie either.
It's the most on the nose thing, but what else do you enjoy about sort of her performance?
Oh, I just love it when she like when she takes up a gun and like starts like shooting up the wholeness. Like she like Kevin Costner's like saving her, and but like she gets a gun and like and then she just kind of goes Rambo on.
Yeah, she's like a strong independent character who definitely like folds a little bit at the end, but. She does have that like gusto to her. She isn't the typical like romantic interest pushover. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
While I think those two performances are good, we also should mention Ford Lincoln Mercury, who is kind of the as we said the person who puts it all together. He's also got a lot of this movie has a lot of parallels to Dune, with like the Messiah. Aspects of it and people following, and Ford Lincoln Mercury is definitely the Stilgar to the Paul Atreides, where just like anything he does, he's like Lisan HaGlaib, he's like postman, exactly what you want. I will assemble you an army.
Totally.
And he, yeah, it's strange because he is like also like lying to it, but he has conviction to it. Like he writes fake letters to that are from the president and like reads them out. To the like followers to try and like keep getting more people and more people in.
Yeah, to bring more hope, I would say too. Mm-hmm. Because Kevin Costner just disappears for like an amount of time, and so he kind of like takes that mantle over. And yeah, he definitely does like lie a lot to like make sure that he's getting to get more people to be a part of the cause.
Yeah, it is weird that like an underlying theme of this movie is just like lie your way to hope and better time. But that's pretty much what all the characters on all sides do all the time. And, a couple other characters of note, I mentioned Michael. Poor Michael is like, there's tropes about like, female characters being just like objects for their, like, you know, male suitors and stuff right. like that. Michael is like the most pushover, like, cucked character I think I can remember in a movie. Because not only is he just like, also he's, if like I was like, who is this person? Because I remembered it. It's if you've seen Whose Line Is It Anyway, it's Chip from Whose Line Is It Anyway.
Oh
the
yeah,
guy
it
who
is.
Plays this.
Yeah,
and he's like, first off, just like the meekest dude. Like offers up like, yeah, I need, come on, postman, get with my life, and then immediately gets killed so that he, you know, he's like just there to be a plot device and
right.
be sacrificed. Mm. It's just like really tough look. The other characters of note, Giovanni Ribisi in this movie, who we saw in that previous clip, is basically, if you've seen Tropic Thunder, he is a simple Jack. He is just like almost offensive in how stupid he is. It's like borderline.
It is a weird role. Like, and but he's really fun in the, like, in the scenes
yeah,
that he has with Costner.
He has energy, but yeah, he's yeah. just like, it's so strange.
I think it goes with what they're trying to set up with the wholeness. In the beginning of the movie, they really are trying to set up, like, this is like a white supremacist group, and like they'll accept anyone that is white. Mm-hmm. And like, and so like, I think it shows like how poorly they select men to be in their
right.
army. And like, I think that's why they kind of paint Giovanni Ribisi as like a, it's kind of a dumb character.
Yeah. And it's weird. Cause that whole thread, it just gets dropped. Like after 45 minutes, it's like, it establishes and you're like, oh, is this going to be like a main theme? And are we going to meet a lot of other characters? And it's just like the only like real POC character is Ford Lincoln Mercury.
Totally.
And everybody else is just like a bunch of white folks. And then you're like, how is there only one, you know, especially if like that's like the ethnic cleansing thing. It's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, it was very I wonder if the I think the book goes into a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But that's.
And there's one other character of note that I feel like I should show a clip of. And this is one of the weirdest cameo things ever. This is a mayor of one of the towns that the postman stumbles across. And he is none other than
Where
Tom
are
Petty.
We? You're in Bridge City. Where we don't allow guns. Sentry said you were coming.
I know you. You're famous.
I was once. Sort of. Kind of. Not anymore. You looking across?
We will.
Anyway, yeah. So Tom Petty's Tom Petty, I think, is supposed to be Tom Petty, but
oh,
they never like
Tom, yeah.
explicitly say like, wait, Tom Petty is just straight up the mayor of this, because it's 2013. So it's just like,
yeah, no, he's definitely trying to be like, it is a weird cameo. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing it as a kid. I was familiar with Tom Petty at the time, and I was like, well, that's cool. Like, and that's what Tom Petty would have done in post-apocalypse.
Very, like, dude, man, he's like a cool, cool bro mayor of this post-apocalyptic damn town. But yeah, I think between the, you know, epic nature of this, the sort of unfairness of lumping it in with the other Costner things and some of these supporting roles, you know, there is stuff to be mined here. So I think that's like a strong base of a defense, but we'll run a little low on time, so we'll hop into the junk drawer. Is there any like random thoughts you wanted to get out before we get out of here?
Man, I mean, there's a lot of thoughts I have, but like, I really think that the beginning of the movie is just really like what I will say. Like, if you go watch it, it's the first like hour of it is epic, and then it kind of slows down, obviously. But I don't really have any like great like. There's, what do you have? Yeah,
A few things. We mentioned there was a horse sword fight early in the thing, I guess it's a mule sword.
He has
fight.
A
He has
mule.
A trained mule who will like hold a sword and perform Shakespeare with him. So if you want to just see a mule sword fight, that's something to look into. Also, like the thing that moves him to become a postman really is he's in the back of this post truck and he gets like a letter. He's like reading through the mail and like one has like a child's tooth in it that he was mailing to like his grandfather or something. So really like the inciting incident is like Kevin Costner being moved by some child mailing a bone in the mail. So just keep that up. We mentioned the time stuff and the lack of things. Yeah, I don't know. It is like then there is justification that like he, you know, as you, I think you were going to mention that like his traveling showmanship is sort of part of the thing that like leads to all this postman stuff.
The one thing that is a kind of a big plot point that kind of gets brought up at the very, very end of the film is Kevin Costner becomes part of the wholeness and they have like a they have rules.
Yeah.
And that anyone in the wholeness army can challenge for the and at the end
leadership,
of it,
yeah.
He like reveals this like branded eight
thing
on his arm
from when he got captured.
And then like that's when him and Will Patton like kind of have this weird like horse fight. In the middle of
they jump off horses, they jump off horses and slam into each other and then roll around on the ground. It is not the most exciting action climax you'll ever see. It's kind of like two men like bar fighting on the ground, like you know, just like
it's edited poorly. And I think that's odd for reasons because they didn't have a good scene to like have any action for it.
All right, so that's The Postman. Before we get out of here, any plugs that you want to do, Brennan?
Sure. I am from Spokane. I run a podcast called Spokecast. I interview people in Spokane that are doing cool and interesting things. I love being here in Boise. I've first time being in Boise since like 2005. So like got a lot of comparisons to Spokane all the time, but like being down here is so cool, and I hope that we have like a tree fort someday. But other plugs is my friends Got You. They're playing at Payette at 6 o'clock tonight, and then
you also have another podcast where you do pop culture stuff.
Thank you. I have another podcast called Super 90s Brothers. I've been doing that podcast since 2017, and similar to this, but we only do 90s movies, and it's us mostly just waxing nostalgic about certain movies, like, and not really, we don't really go in depth too much. We just talk about how we remember it and then the characters that are in it.
Mm-hmm. And for me, you can subscribe to the podcast. Everyone Is Wrong, pretty easy to find. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram stuff. If you search Everyone Is Wrong, you should be able to find that. We did an episode last year here with the drummer from Skating Polly on Batman and Robin, if you want to check that one out. We also have done another Costner episode on Mr. Brooks, which is a weird Kevin Costner serial killer movie with a ton of lore that was meant to be like this weird trilogy and didn't get there. I did an episode of on the Beatles musical Across the Universe with Naomi from Itchy Kitty, who is there playing at 12:30 at Shredder tonight. If you want to go check them out, that's Spokane's best band. And yeah, other than that, there's musical episodes in our archive, Good Charlotte, Warren's Cherry Pie, did a Mountain Goats episode, all sorts of things. But we're running short on time, so thanks all of you who came out. I really appreciate it. I know it's weird, like 1 p.m. at Boise on a weekday, but I appreciate anybody coming out at all. And thanks, Brennan, again.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun.
And remember, even if everyone else mocks it, love the stuff you love.
Thank you.
Yay.
Thank you, Seth.